Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, we have the one and only Dr. Alan Bauman, and he is a hair restoration physician, the founder and CEO and director of Bauman Medical. This is a premier hair restoration center in Boca Raton, Florida. And he's been treating patients for hair procedures since 1997. So that's like 34,000 patients and 12,000 hair transplants. So this is a man who's well versed in everything hair. So I'm really excited to bring him on. He's a very well sought after speaker and educator at all the major conferences. Welcome to the podcast, Alan.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
It's
so
great to be here with you.
second podcast. So if you guys are really hair geeks and hair nerds like I am, you should tune into the first one. Find it on our lineup of podcasts. But today, I thought there's so much going on in the hair world regarding growth factors, exosomes, polynucleotides, and products that can be given to the scalp directly. So I want to talk all about that. What's been going on in your world?
Well, gosh, it's super exciting in the world of hair restoration and hair transplantation. I really think regenerative medicine, has been the source of some of the most exciting breakthroughs in the field, and certainly continues to deliver just time and time again. One of the things, and we just had chatted briefly about this, is the use of exosome therapy, which is really off the shelf stem cell type therapy, and it's been great for hair growth and hair restoration as well as healing after hair transplant. So very excited about that. The use of growth factors and peptides certainly continues to expand around the world of regenerative medicine and longevity, and we're keen on that as well. We've been delivering growth factors and peptides using sonophoresis, or the TED treatment, if you will, transepidermal delivery in our patients. So it's a much easier process than a PRP, obviously. It's there's no needles, it's no drama, no trauma, as they say. And there's no recovery or downtime from that. So, and then we also have dovetail with that, some at-home products that also are based in peptides as we go along into the future. So, but those are some of the biggest breakthroughs. Of course, we continue to talk about what the consumer says is biohacking baldness, which are the different things that you can do to try to identify things that are put your hair at risk, from scalp health to nutrition to lifestyle and toxic factors. To obviously your genetics and what we can do on supplement side, pharmaceutical side, and photobiomodulation or laser light therapy side before we get to the transplant process.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about delivery methods, because I think patients and providers out there need to hear what level is the hair follicle at, and when you're doing topical treatments, what are you reaching down to with transepidermal versus with injections versus where do you want to be in there?
Sure. So, I mean, just for the layperson, a hair follicle is a small item, right? Less than a millimeter wide and 4 to 5 millimeters deep is the bulb of the hair, essentially. And remember that the hair follicle is the machinery that's like the 3D printer that creates the hair fiber that we see and that we can touch, that exudes from the skin and mostly the scalp in Homo sapiens, obviously. And what we're trying to affect is the hair follicle function. And there are literally probably over 100,000 cells in every hair follicle, if not more. And it's one of the most highly metabolic cell populations. But the interesting thing is that the hair follicle is sensitive to a number of different things, not only its local area. If there's, inflammation or irritation or healing going on, the hair follicle can be affected, but also hormones and other things that are happening in the body, whether it be cortisol, androgens, and things like that can affect the hair follicle function. If your body is under undue amount of stress, physiologic or even mental perceived stress can exacerbate hair follicle function. So there's a lot of different things that can be going on to affect how this hair fiber is created and how the fiber is looking, whether it's smooth and shiny and thick and long and all of that. So if we're trying to affect the hair follicle function from the outside using a topical medication, the good news is that the hair follicle actually can transmit those molecules directly into the base of the follicle itself. And so you don't really need too much of anything if you're using a minoxidil compound to get minoxidil into the skin. And that's why Rogaine, essentially, even with the most nastiest propylene glycol mixture back in the 1970s, still worked for hair growth. But if you want to really get some more larger molecules down into the skin, you're going to have to either inject them, right? Penetrate the skin with a needle and deploy them in that intradermal space where the hair follicle lives, just a few millimeters down, not too far down. Or you're going to have to use something called sonophoresis, which is a method of disruption of the stratum corneum. So sound waves, ultrasonic sound waves are known to, at certain frequencies are known to disrupt the stratum corneum, which is, as most people know, is the moisture barrier. It's the thing that keeps the water out of the skin. It's the reason why you can soak in the tub and not blow up like a sponge. Thank you, stratum corneum. But it also keeps out those molecules. So if you use the ultrasound on the stratum corneum, it disrupts that lipid layer, and you can penetrate with much larger molecules temporarily, and you can deploy and deposit those molecules deep in under the skin, right at the level of the hair follicle. And that's TED, transepidermal delivery. It's using sonophoresis, and it's a treatment that takes less than an hour, maybe about 30, 40 minutes or so. And the magic is in the serum as well. So the serum and the delivery system is really what makes that work, with a needle-free opportunity to get some hair regrowth and hair regeneration.
How far below that stratum corneum does that go? And is that close enough to the follicle to where it's going to
Oh,
get some good?
absolutely. So the stratum corneum is just beneath the dried surface layer of the epithelial cells. And so when you disrupt the stratum corneum, the research is very, very clear that you can push those molecules very deep. And that's the other thing about the handpiece with the TED device, is it's not just delivering the ultrasonic waves to disrupt that layer and make it more permeable to the molecules, but it also has kind of a push effect as well. So some of the video, for example, that I show in my presentations on sonophoresis is a video of the handpiece sitting in a viscous solution, and you can actually see the pressure pushing down from that handpiece. So it's this combination that can actually deposit the molecules pretty deep, a couple millimeters down for sure. And that's what was shown in some of the clinical research, published clinical research actually, on sonophoresis and these delivery systems. So very, very well described in the literature. Sonophoresis is not new. It's been around since the 1950s or 60s in the world of orthopedics. But using these growth factors and peptides is really, the regenerative part for hair restoration and for skin too.
Let's talk about peptides because I know you just came from A4M and all the biohackers are using, copper peptides, GHK. And what are your thoughts on what peptides are best for hair?
Sure. So copper GHK has kind of made a resurgence in the world of hair loss and hair restoration. And we are no strangers to the use of copper tripeptide. Copper peptide solutions were literally the first wound healing treatment that we ever used on hair transplants way back in the 1990s. So as early as 1999, we were dispensing copper peptide solution and gel to our patients. And we use this specifically on the scalp. There were a couple of ways to deliver it, not just a spray format, but also these gauze packets, which were soaked in copper peptide solution, gel that you could put on the donor zone. And it was a great treatment. It was very blue because obviously that's the color of copper peptide. But the research was very clear that there was some improvements in hair growth from copper peptide, as well as improved wound healing. And today there's even some evidence that we might get some repigmentation from copper peptide, or at least protection of the current pigment in the areas where we're treating with copper peptide solutions. So that's one of the main things. Some of the other ones that I like are Proheron B4, which is a thymosin beta-4 derivative. That's another peptide that's being delivered through the sonophoresis process when you use the hair care serum that comes with the TED. But there's a number of other things in that serum too that are great. Fibroblast growth factor, VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor. Those are really powerful molecules for hair growth as well.
I just recently saw an article that was in the news from Nature about how intermittent fasting is making our hair fall out. Did you see that, and what were your thoughts on that?
Well, let's talk about intermittent fasting. I mean, obviously, some people intermittent fast for a very good reason. They want to try to, disrupt that regular American diet cycle, which is, every 3 hours, stuffing our face or getting a sweet coffee or something at Starbucks. So I think intermittent fasting is a good way to metabolically enhance our lifestyle for sure. I've done 3 day and 5 day water fasts. But here's the thing. If you are on any kind of regimen that depletes the body of nutrients and fuel for any extended period of time. Now, of course, different people are going to be different in terms of sensitivity to that that statement, but nutrients and fuel sensing is critical to hair follicle function. And this is not something new, even though we see it all like crazy right now with Ozempic and the GLP-1s. We've also seen it with bariatric surgery and all the fad diets that you can remember, from the cookie diet to whatever, to the cracker diet, everything that disrupts the amount of nutrients that you either take in or absorb. And so what happens typically is that when you decrease the amount of nutrient absorption, your body then starts to triage the nutrients and fuel a little bit differently. It starts to shunt that very, very important fuel to more critical components of the body, organ systems, and so forth, so that you can basically maintain survival. And remember that in the days of old, food wasn't so plentiful, and we had to go for, at times days or weeks or so without a plentiful supply of food. And we certainly didn't wake up in a cave with a full refrigerator of whatever. So, I'm a big fan of intermittent fasting. I don't think it's disrupting the hair as much as people think it is. But again, if you overdo it, then you can certainly see some exacerbation. And I would just kind of footnote that with the Ozempic craze. Not only are you depleting bone density and muscle mass, but your body's going to shunt the hair, shunt the fuel away from your hair, and you can enter a very aggressive shedding phase and a very prominent acceleration of hereditary hair loss too, which is not so good if you're prone to male or female pattern hair loss.
I've been doing treatments for patients to prevent Ozempic face. Are you doing preventative treatments? Like, you know, you're going to start Ozempic. This is how we maintain your hair through the
Oh,
process.
100%.
What do
You
you do?
know, ever since COVID, I mean, we were doing pre-treatments for people who thought they might be at risk for catching COVID because it was such a bad situation for those with, for those who are prone to hair loss or even autoimmune hair loss. So the first most important thing, if you're getting ready to go on a special diet, and like I said, it could be an intermittent fasting protocol or even just a 3 or 5 day water fast with electrolytes, it could be any of the above. If you're going to do any of that plus or a weight loss program, medical weight loss program specifically, you're getting prepared to lose a lot of weight. You're going to shed some hair. And so we want to, first of all, take a measurement. What is your existing hair measurements now? And so we use a AI-powered microscope that's called Hair Metrics to actually do a density calculation in different areas of the scalp. It can actually measure the caliber of each and every hair in the zone that we're photographing. And so it gives us a plethora of data that we can use to track over time to see, is your nutritional regimen affecting your hair, either positively or negatively, whether you've added a supplement or herbal to your regimen, or you've added a pharmaceutical or a laser or something. We'll be able to track your progress with that AI-powered microscope, as well as a cross-sectional bundle measurement that's called hair check. And that makes like a little scientific ponytail in different areas of the scalp so that we can see exactly what's going on over time. So that becomes your baseline measurement. And then let's say you go on your nutritional change, whether it be a GLP-1 or whatnot, and then we'll track it in 90-day intervals. This is also very common for folks who are going on hormone optimization therapy. And the use of testosterone getting more and more common, not only in men, but also in postmenopausal women, for all the great benefits that that you derive from it, increased muscle mass, brain function, things like that. But you also can notice if you're prone to male or female pattern hair loss, if you're androgen sensitive, you're going to have some hair loss from those androgens. You want to make sure you have a baseline before you start testosterone therapy. And then, God forbid, if it starts to decline, we need to get on top of it quickly, whether it be fortifying the hair growth with non-invasive treatments, as we mentioned, all the ones before, topical medications or oral medications, laser light, PRP, sonophoresis with TED, peptides, growth factors, supplementation. We really want to get on it early before you experience some kind of dreadful shedding.
I agree. Is hair check also a analytic thing, or is that just dividing the hair and checking it?
Hair check is a scientific tool. It's actually an electronic caliper, if you will. So it comes with two things, the caliper itself, but also a stereotactic tool, which helps you measure from the bridge of the nose back to the same area again and again. So you can get back to the areas. So we look at the bellwether areas. Like for men, it's going to be just behind the forelock and the crown, of course. In women, we might look in the temple areas or the crown, the frontal zone, and the mid scalp. And so all of those areas are tracked, meaning that in a postage stamp size area, 2 by 2 centimeter zone, all the hairs are collected together into a bundle, and that bundle is compressed and measured. And so because it's only about, a centimeter or two off the scalp, it's a very, very sensitive measurement to how much hair is growing in that area and also the caliber of the hair. And so if you lose a few hairs, if the hair is growing thinner or shorter or wispier, those numbers quickly change way in advance of you noticing it with the naked eye.
Interesting. So many people are getting hair treatments done and they do absolutely no before and after photography measurements or hair counts. I see it all through aesthetics that we're doing PRP injections and I want to make sure that we that level up in our industry. So what would you suggest is in terms of like a baseline that's mandatory or necessary before starting hair treatments? Probably exactly what you recommended.
So if you're going to a local dermatologist or another practitioner who is treating your hair with whatever therapy, PRP, whatever the latest and greatest thing is, and he or she has not looked at your hair and scalp under a microscope, photographed that microscopic density, calculated the numbers of hairs per square inch or square centimeter in each zone, and quantified the number of miniaturized hairs in each zone, then he or she has no clue how to tell you whether you're going to be a good, fair, or poor responder to that therapy. So it's a big guess. So another thing is, if your practitioner is telling you you're going to need a repeat series of these treatments, that's another warning sign that they may not be using the state-of-the-art numbers of platelets that are required and the adjunctive therapies like a scaffold, biologic, or synthetic scaffold to prolong the effect. So, if all they've done is kind of combed your hair and taken a picture with their iPhone from across the room, that's like not the state of the art. So in a hair clinic, there should be a dedicated windowless room with consistent lighting, standardized lighting, and a standardized camera that's specifically for the before and after global photography. So that means your medical mugshots. And then there should be some kind of microscopic tool. It doesn't have to be an AI-powered one, but some kind of microscopic tool to track your density in different zones over time. Because here's the thing, if you don't do that and you just say, oh, well, I'm okay, I'll feel it if it grows, great. It's going to take 6 to 6 months to a year to know that, by the way. But then if you've just had it one treatment, how do you know when that treatment modality has peaked in terms of its effect and then has started to decline? Without a measurement, you will have to wait until you have lost all the benefit of that treatment before starting over. And that's not what we do. So, there's a big variety of like state of the big difference between state of the art and like, yeah, we got hair loss things going on here.
Yeah, that's challenging. I think it's very hard for the average beginning aesthetic practice or dermatologist even to definitely have an
Well,
eye and do all that. But you're right.
I'm going to have to
It's
disagree with you there
available.
because we teach those specific techniques using hair check to cosmetologists. And I can tell you, if the shampoo girl at your salon can do it, a doctor can do it too. It's not because they can't learn it, it's because they don't want to or they're too lazy. And so go to hair coach classes. We give them all the time. We have some virtual, some in the office here. When you come for a hair coach class and you learn about the metabolism and the function of the hair follicle and the therapies and treatments, you will also get free with the class. You get the tool, you get hair check. It comes with it. So I don't buy it that it's too complicated. It's a matter of motivation. And even if the doctor doesn't want to do it, then find a PA or a nurse practitioner or even the medical assistant. I don't care if it's the gal at the front desk, get her trained on how to measure hair. If you're otherwise, you are a snake oil salesman. I'm sorry.
I love that. We need to up level. Also, in terms of PRP, you were mentioning the amount of platelets per injection. For harvest. So, how are you checking that? Are you getting a CBC with platelets prior to make sure the patient has an actual platelet count that's normal
So,
or?
yeah. So here at Baumann Medical, we're basically like a hair hospital. So I've got a Holter counter, which is a hematology counter at the bedside in our PRP room. So we have a dedicated room where we process and prepare and deploy the PRP. In that room, we take a blood from the blood sample that we harvest from the patient. We get a baseline platelet count, and we know right away if the platelet count is 250 or higher, you're golden. Like not much has to happen. If your platelet count is 200 or lower, then you may not get an adequate dose of PRP. We'd have to actually fine-tune the PRP in order to get the right platelets per microliter. And so there are different ways that you can do that. If you don't know the baseline platelet count at the moment of harvest, meaning the harvest of the blood, then you're not going to know how to fine-tune the PRP preparation to get to the actual effective dose. The dose of platelets that you need for activation of stem cell mobilization and new blood vessel formation is very clear in the literature. It happens to come out of the orthopedic literature from almost 15 years ago now, and this is how I learned about it. And it's been confirmed many, many times. When you're looking for 1.5 million platelets per microliter. And actually, if you're below a million platelets per microliter, that's actually not PRP by definition. You've actually not provided platelet-rich plasma. You've provided something completely different, platelet-poor plasma, which, you're probably not going to do much of anything except the poke of the needle that you use to inject. So if you want effective treatment, you've got to know exactly how many platelets are in that product. And so people come all the time to the clinic and they say, you know what? In my local derm, they just took a sample of blood, they spun it down in a test tube and injected it in my head. Maybe they didn't, maybe they used it local anesthetic or not, but most of the time they don't. And they wonder why that treatment did not produce any viable result. Again, unfortunately, there's a wide variety of practitioners out there. And it's important to know what you're getting. And so if your practitioner, you're who's doing your PRP, and whether it's a Medi Spa or other, if they're not telling you how many platelet, what the platelet concentration is, then they're basically giving you a treatment. Like, think about taking a medication and the doctor didn't tell you the dosage that he gave you. Who does that? Nobody. So measure the hair, measure the platelets, and let's do this with some science, okay?
How about blood work ahead of time? Like when we look at a hair loss patient, I honestly get them a whole entire blood panel just to see if they're anemic, if they have thyroid disease, vitamin D deficiency, all those things. Or what's your routine things that you check?
Absolutely. So, we don't just like run blood work on everybody just because, we can, because we certainly could. I mean, we're drawing blood on every PRP patient, of course. But first thing we like to do is talk to the patient. So, if they're talking about low energy or other symptoms that could relate to anemia, heavy periods in a menstruating female, obviously, if they have had a history of anemia or low ferritin, we want to elucidate that during the medical history. And I'm a little bit old-fashioned on that. I like to kind of find out if there's symptomatology that correlates with a reason to go get some blood work. Yes, there's sometimes asymptomatic things that we can pick up for sure on blood levels for, biomarkers today. Definitely, we can do even saliva testing for DNA analysis to see what their tendencies are as toward metabolic pathways that might influence hair loss and treatments that we provide. And all of that can be part of the workup. I definitely want to look at thyroid function. I want to look at if they're anemic or low in ferritin, of course. Vitamin D is very important for hair growth. We know that there's a correlation now between vitamin D and low vitamin D and hair loss patients. So, these are some of the things that we may want to look at. A lot of my patients are already on hormone optimization therapy. So, they may have recent blood work to look at hormone levels and things like that. But I caution patients, male patients come in, they say, oh, I have my DHT level checked and it hasn't increased and blah, blah, blah. Well, remember that it's not the absolute value of DHT, either in men or women, that causes or triggers the hereditary hair loss, but it's their sensitivity to the DHT. So, and there's no test for that other than to look at the scalp and see if there's some signs or symptoms of miniaturization going on in the clear and present pattern.
How important is ferritin, would you say, iron stores? Like, is that very seriously correlated? It must be because the hair follicle is very highly metabolic and turns off its energy flow when there's no ferritin.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously ferritin iron is required for oxygen delivery to the follicle, especially to those outer reaches of the skin. And so if they're low in ferritin, you're basically limiting some of that fuel that's getting to the follicle. You need the oxygen for those metabolic pathways for the follicle to do its business. And so, you're stepping on the gas, but there's no gasoline in the tank, so to speak, if you're providing a hair growth treatment. So yeah, very often patients come in and they've never had a workup. They've gone to their Medi Spa for this, that, or the other quick fix treatment, and then wonder why it didn't work. It's because the practitioner did not take a deep dive in, or even look at their scalp to say, hey, whoa, you know what? What's going on here? You've got a lot of buildup. You've got a lot of inflammation at the level of the scalp, and it's important to pick up on scalp health signs and symptoms well in advance of trying to address your hair loss.
What's the name of the saliva test and what metabolic test does that kind of What pathways do
Oh, we use Tricotest, which is GX Trico. It's from Fagron, which is a pharmaceutical company. It was designed in Spain. It's a simple DNA test. You basically do a cheek swab, send it off to the lab, and there's about 16 or 18 different SNPs that it looks at. The main metabolic pathways that are influencing, let's say, hair growth treatments, for example, are the ones that are impacting the ability to mobilize or the ability to convert minoxidil to minoxidil sulfate. That's probably one of the main ones that we find that's dysregulated or has a propensity for dysregulation in certain populations. And what that means is that the minoxidil comes out of the bottle needs to be converted, and it needs to be converted in the skin by an enzyme that you have there. It's called sulfotransferase. And if the sulfotransferase is low, meaning low activity, then you're not converting minoxidil to minoxidil sulfate, and you're less likely to get a response from, let's say, over-the-counter Rogaine or prescription minoxidil. And so a lot of folks that come in, they say, you know what, I tried Rogaine years ago. It didn't seem to have much of an effect. And then I say, well, let's take a deeper dive. Maybe you need a booster for minoxidil. Maybe you need something that will ramp up your sulfotransferase. But before we do that, let's do the genetic test to see what what you're likely to have in terms of sulfotransferase activity. So that's one of the ideas. Some of the other pathways that we look at, for example, in men would be the 5-alpha reductase pathway. That's the enzyme, and there's a couple of subunits a couple of different versions of the 5-alpha reductase type 1 and type 2 that convert testosterone into DHT. Type 2 is the main pathway, and if you're on finasteride, for example, you can block type 2 5-alpha reductase with that pretty well and get about an 85% reduction in overall DHT production, which is nice. If you want to block the type 1, then you would need dutasteride, which blocks both pathways, type 1 and type 2. And that gives you about an over 90% reduction in DHT production, which is nice. But here's the thing. If, let's say, for example, you're on finasteride and you have a highly active type 1 5-alpha reductase, that's that other pathway, right? That's not being blocked by the finasteride. And that can be elucidated on the genetic test we were talking about, then that would be a good reason to potentially switch over to dutasteride, because you're going to just have more DHT hanging around than would be expected being on just finasteride alone. And there's a lot of other things too. This tests are nutrigenomic as well, not just pharmacogenomic. So it looks at the propensity for low iron, low vitamin E levels, vitamins D, E, A. It also looks at collagen stability molecules, the different subunits of collagen, whether you're likely to have collagen instability. So it kind of gives us a little bit of a hint. Should we be going down the path of doing more blood work, looking at these levels of iron and so forth, and then what we can do to keep an eye on things? Are you prone to have low vitamin D? Are you MTHFR positive, meaning you need methylated B vitamins more than someone else would? Those are the kinds of things that we find out from genetic testing in hair loss.
That's so interesting. So now that you've kind of diagnosed your patient, and we talked about PRP having variable levels of platelets, do you find that platelet-derived growth factor injections directly, the new product Eriesence, is that going to be a way around all of these patients who have low platelets? Is it kind of like a huge boost in your results because of that highly concentrated growth factor?
Yeah, I think that has a lot of promise. I've yet to see some really good clinical data on that. I think that the concept is correct. Just like we know, if we get more of these, whether it be peptides or other signals into the body, or even exosomes and so forth, into the skin near the follicle, we have a greater chance of rejuvenating the follicle function. So platelet-derived growth factor is certainly implicated in the pathways. The question will be, if you put so much in there, is there another rate limiting step that's holding the follicle back, for example? Like, you'll still have an issue with DHT. Do you still have an issue with circulation because you've been vaping nicotine every night? I mean, there's so many. Are you on a metabolically deficient, nutrient deficient diet, or on some kind of a weight loss program? So, it's not, there's no one silver bullet for this kind of thing, Dr. K.
Yeah, it's so complicated. There are so many pathways for hair. And then, yeah, if you get the platelet-derived growth factor, does it matter? Do you still need the VEGF and the FGF?
Yeah. And so, yeah, great point. So there's, all of these different growth factors, are implicated. And what is the contribution of the local area? Adipocytes that are in the area, fibroblasts that are local to the hair follicle also contribute. We even know that the hair follicle has its own biologic clock and circadian rhythm effects as well. So,
That's
you know,
another
there's.
huge question I have. Like when you're seeing a patient for hair, how do we know which phase of hair growth the hair is in? And do we not start treatments until we're in an active growth phase or versus a resting phase or, anagen or telogen? Does it even matter that all the hair is recycling at different rates? So we start no matter what. Is there a measure for that?
Well, actually, there is a quick test for that. But, just to back up for a moment, I mean, a healthy head of hair, 150,000 hairs on your head, hair follicles, right? About 84 or 85% of them are in the growing phase any given day. And hair follicles are turning on and turning off. The growth cycle should last 5 to 7 years on average, although it could be much longer. I have one of my surgical technicians has hair length down past her hips. And so I know her anagen is much longer than 7 years. I don't know how long she could grow her hair because she does, she does trim the ends. But so anagen phase is a genetically determined trait. But let's just say the average person is going to grow for 5 to 7 years. That gives you a nice shoulder length hair, a nice ponytail if you let it grow. And then each follicle at various times are going to turn off after that cycle is complete and rest for 90 days. And then of course, after that, hopefully the follicle turns back on and carries out another 5 to 7 year growth cycle. If someone is having an aggressive synchronized shed that we call telogen effluvium, we always take a nice medical history. So we want to find out if you're having an effluvium today, what happened to you a month or two ago? You know, what happened in the recent past that could have interrupted the hair follicle function? And so years, not just a couple of years ago through COVID, it could have been a vaccination effect. It could have been the mRNA. It could have been actual COVID infection itself. It could have been, any kind of illness that generates a fever can actually cause this synchronized shed. And of course, as you know, also, as the hormone levels drop after childbirth, you can get a synchronized shed as well. Usually, again, 6 weeks out from the day of childbirth. You have to be ready. But exposure to general anesthesia, even jet lag, can really stimulate this synchronized shedding of hair. But usually it happens, like I said, 6 to 12 weeks after the insult to the follicle. And it's because the new hair is pushing its way out and pushing out the old hair at that moment. If someone's coming in with an active shed, what we could do is call the pull test. And we just grab not a lot of hair, but just, a couple dozen, and just a gentle pull to see how many hairs, what percentage of those hairs come out. And so if it's an aggressive percentage of hair, then we know that they're in an active shedding phase. And there's a lot of treatments that we can now use today as a treatment for an active shed that we've never had before. So for example, the TED treatment that we talked about is great for active shedding. It's phenomenal. We used it during COVID all the time for those people in active sheds. Worked very, very well for that. Laser light therapy, minoxidil can also be used oral or topical. And of course, PRP is great to address those active shedding phases.
Yeah, amazing. I definitely do want to talk about exosomes and what are exosomes? What are they? What are they able to do for the scalp and the hair follicle in general? And which ones have you found working amazingly?
Yeah, so just 10,000 foot view, exosomes are little tiny bubbles that come from cells, essentially. And years ago, in fact, when I was in medical school 30 years ago, we were taught that exosomes were basically just waste products from the cell, that the cell
Yeah.
was getting rid of this information. But what we know today is that those exosomes, which are literally 1/1,000th the size of a cell, it's not a garbage can. It's a packet of really important information. And so it's not a garbage can, it's a mailbox, as they say, or a FedEx package. And so those little tiny bubbles are used for cell-to-cell communication. And every type of liquid in your body contains exosomes. So everything from urine to saliva to breast milk and you name it, there's exosomes. But the exosomes that we are after is the cell-to-cell communication that originate from mesenchymal stem cells, because those are the ones that are really, really important for tissue regeneration and repair in the body. And so how do we know that? Well, if you're going to have a stem cell therapy, quote unquote, into your, injured elbow, the stem cells go into the elbow. They don't become the elbow, which is what we thought, 20 years ago. They actually sense the area of injury and then they start messaging the local zone If it needs more blood flow, it asks for more blood vessels. If it needs inflammation or decrease in inflammation, it modulates that. If it needs some kind of a healing process, it tells the fibroblast to kick in. Well, a lot of those same signals that are used for tissue regeneration repair, as we've talked about previously, fibroblast growth factor and so forth, and even the microRNA that's used to modulate those bodily functions and cellular functions, they can actually message the hair follicles to grow thicker, better, and stronger. They can also help the body recover more quickly from hair transplantation. So exosomes hold a lot of promise, right? But the question is, what's in it and where do they come from? And that's been the big question. And how much concentration, how many exosomes do we actually need to get the job done? And at Bauman Medical, we've been using exosomes for many years, probably like 6 or 8 years already. But I will tell you that the quality of these exosomes today, the product quality is so much more robust than it was just a few years ago. The improvements in wound healing have been dramatic. So what we're doing is we're deploying these exosomes, and many of them are, for example, umbilical cord derived. That means that in the laboratory they have the umbilical cord stem cell lines that are they are very well qualified, quantified, and registered with the FDA, and they're putting those cells into bioreactors to expand them. And what they're doing is they're separating the stem cell messages, those exosomes, from the cells themselves. So we're getting just the exosomes. They're being concentrated, purified, quantified, and then concentrated into a little tiny vial. And literally, in a vial about the size of my pinky finger, we're going to get hundreds of billions of exosomes. And then those are delivered to us cryopreserved. So when we're ready to use and deploy the exosomes, we thaw that little vial, and then we deploy them at the level of the scalp. And so what we've been doing with the exosomes more recently, this is just within the past 2.5 years, is we've been actually not just using it around the time of the hair transplant on the skin, but now we're soaking the grafts in these very special exosomes. And I'm a big fan of Juvexo. Juvexo H is a very special product, I believe. It has a dramatic ability to accelerate the body's recovery from transplants and also accelerate the hair growth that we see. So that patients now, instead of waiting 6 months to see half of the result, much of the result is now visible at 4 months. This is much quicker than ever before.
That's incredible. And what's different about the Juvexo H versus other
Well,
exosomes?
Juvexo H is umbilical cord derived stem cell exosomes, and it also contains bioengineered growth factors that are specifically to modulate the hair follicle function. So it's got kind of this double whammy of the growth factors that are specific for hair follicle function, as well as the exosome cargo.
Nice. What are those growth factors like the FGF and VEGF and or are there hair specific growth factors?
Yeah, and that's part of
Not
their
secret.
proprietary product. So, without an NDA, we can't discuss that. But no, the product has some very, very powerful ingredients. And it's a really, really nice combination. Specifically, it's got the H. So Juvexo H is specifically tuned for hair. And
Hair.
it's pretty
Okay.
amazing. I mean, think about this for a moment, Kay. For the past 25 years or more, at 4 months, a hair tra four months post hair transplant, that phone call has been dreaded by physicians around the world. Do you understand
I
why?
don't see anything. Hair is
Because it
shedding.
because it's a psych consult, right? Don't worry, it's coming. You're not seeing anything yet. It's all right. Hang in there. It's on its way. Stay tuned. So that's the conversation I've had in thousands and thousands and thousands of patients since the 1990s at 4 months. And that's why we don't usually make their next appointment after the transplant. We have a video and photo appointment in the office at 6 months. Why? Because that's the time we start to see the hair growth. Well, today, patient after patient after patient, I'm seeing these results at 4 months. The patients are calling me not to complain about not seeing anything. They're calling to me, telling me, "Hey, doc, look how good it looks."
Wow, that's awesome.
It's wild.
That's crazy. That's after you've done so many hair transplants to see that must be so rewarding.
It is because, I mean, look, I always love innovations surgically, and sometimes it makes it seem sometimes our innovations are like kind of small steps. And over the years, we look back and we're like, wow, a bunch of those small steps added up, right? To be able to do, 4,000, 5,000 grafts in a single session, things like that. But this is so dramatically different in terms of changing the trajectory of the patient follow-up and post-operative care. It's like, I don't even know like when the hairs are going to grow now. It's just a bit of a guess. It's so quickly it's happening.
That's crazy. Are you involved with the company? Are you with Juvexo-H?
Well, with Juvexo, we're now doing a pilot study for them on the deployment of their stem cell exosomes in conjunction with the TED. So no longer, it's not an injection. Of course, the FDA does not want you to inject exosomes. So we're deploying these exosomes using the TED, transepidermal delivery, the sonapheresis that we mentioned earlier. And stay tuned. I mean, we have a small cohort of initial patients trying different protocols, and we'll see what kind of shakes out from that study and see what happens.
Interesting. What's the company that manufactures your TED device?
Alma is the TED, Alma TED.
Okay, cool. And you'd
And
like
then
that one?
Juvexo H is the product from Juvexo, and PPX, which is the plasma-derived exosomes that we talked about earlier. PPX is from Zio Scientifics.
Interesting. I went to AMWC in Tokyo and they had these lovely microjet laser injection devices, which were crazy amazing, but not available in the US. So can't wait for that to come.
Yeah, so there's some new modalities to get stuff through the skin. We've tried a lot of them over the years, whether it be air pressure. You saw this ultrasound, obviously, that we're using. There's the sonapheresis technology, but also there's some newer things that are coming out, electroporation, things like that, that are going to be very, very powerful to move these molecules through the skin.
I mean, just so the consumer knows, the reason we're doing it this way is because the FDA won't allow for injectable exosomes and products just yet, because nobody's done the clinical trials to show that it's safe and has good results.
Well, the
So,
FDA doesn't make any laws, so let's be clear about this. They can issue guidelines. They can also issue warning letters. And so, really, the background behind this issue is the fact that there were some folks in the Midwest who received what they thought was an exosome therapy, or at least it was labeled as such, an intravenous exosome treatment. That means directly into their veins. And it was a batch of these exosome products. And this is a number of years ago now already. I think I want to say like 2017, 2018, maybe. And a bunch of these folks, let's say 10 or 12 of them, ended up septic and in the hospital requiring medical treatment. So that's not so good. You don't want to be injecting things that are not sterile into your veins. That's not so good. And so, in response to that, the FDA has jurisdiction over the manufacturers of these products who claimed that they were sterile, and regardless of their labeling, obviously they were not. And so a warning letter was sent out warning consumers about intravenous, injectable, essentially, exosome therapy. But I have a feeling this is going to be changing because the use of exosome therapy is certainly now widespread in the world of regeneration, cosmetic procedures, and treatments. I have many of my plastic surgery colleagues who are on the podium talking about exosome therapy and how they use them in conjunction with obviously not just surgical therapies like facelifts and things like that, but also non-surgical treatments such as laser therapy, laser light resurfacing, and things like that, and other energy devices, and using the exosomes in conjunction with that to accelerate healing, and also for burn victims, honestly. There's a lot of compassionate use that could be you can make a case for that exosomes should be available to those who have burns, who are healing large areas, because this is one of the best ways that I've seen to heal large area wounds. So, yeah, so there's no law against it. It is the practice of medicine, which is based on it's outside of what the FDA has jurisdiction on.
I agree, but I think topically for now is what's considered, I think, use the safest. Even all the surgeons I know are using it for topical
Oh,
application
absolutely.
incisions on laser surfaces. Like people need to start publishing the results if they're using it under the skin or injectably.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The only real injectable exosome today would be something that would be plasma derived, such as the PPX, because plasma is totally different. PRP obviously can easily be injected, not just orthopedically, but dermatologically as well, and has been used, in many, many cases, not just in orthopedic surgery, cosmetic surgery, and dentistry, and dental restorations, and so forth, many, many, many years, very safely. And so the PPX product, which is actually laboratory developed and laboratory curated, so to speak. What we do is we take a blood sample, and in that blood, as I mentioned earlier, exosomes are in the serum, in the plasma. That blood sample is then processed in the laboratory. It's minimally manipulated, which means that it's only centrifuged and washed and so forth, and very careful and cGMP methodology done by research scientists. And then that end product, a very powerful exosome and exosome product, is lyophilized, which means desiccated, essentially dried, and given back to us in a powder format. And that actually has a very, very nice shelf life. And then that can be reconstituted sterilely and deployed back into the skin, because that is a plasma-derived exosome therapy.
Now that sounds pretty amazing. I think that we should all have a bottle of that for our faces.
Oh, absolutely. And this is one of
Labeled,
the,
it's your own product. It's got to be like the best possible thing for you.
yeah. And this is, so this is the only, in my opinion, and I may be proven wrong, but I think this is the, at this moment, and I presented this at the International Society of Hair Restoration Surgery just a few months ago in Denver, that PPX is really the only injectable exosome product that meets all of the standards that the FDA has currently published as guidelines.
Interesting.
That it autologous, minimally manipulated, and so forth.
And other companies are out there trying to innovate and develop secretomes based from different areas, whether it's hair follicles or skin biopsies. I've seen a few different things, and I think that's also going to be so exciting because perhaps skin has a different, secretome that's going to be beneficial for you than hair, than serum. And
Oh, absolutely. I'm
that's
super
that to
excited about
me.
that. I mean, you're
Yeah.
talking about the ACORN process.
Yes, definitely. And I don't know how much we should say about ACORN, but I know they have exciting things coming for future release. I'm curious if you've
Well,
written.
I already presented it all at the conference. I
Oh,
could
did
already
you?
tell you about
Okay, then let's talk about it. I didn't want
that.
to violate any NDAs, but
No. I mean, look, the bottom line is that ACORN has been around for a number of years now, and the point of ACORN specifically is to preserve and protect, to basically deep freeze hair follicle stem cells. And so that's their primary offering at this point. That was their primary offering at launch. So during a transplant, or even at a non-invasive plucking harvesting session, which is non-surgical, we can take enough biologic material from the hair follicles to send them off to ACORN so that they can be cryopreserved for the future. And what they will do is they will take some of this biologic material, and the part of it that they don't freeze for future use, they can then expand. And the expansion of those cells will then create a secretome, as you mentioned, which is basically the milieu of all the secretions of those hair follicle stem cells. And that can be collected, lyophilized, which means dried, and then sent back to us as a, and deployed as a treatment. And the initial pilot studies are underway right now. This is, in 2025, the pilot studies for that are ongoing. And so we don't have any good news yet, but I'm very optimistic that, as you said, the hunch is that these autologous hair follicle stem cell secretome product might be very powerful for hair rejuvenation and regeneration. It's just a question of how are we going to deploy it? Is there a high enough concentration? And where should we be aiming it? And what kind of patients are going to really be a great benefit from it? So we do have high hopes. Now, again, now their long-term goal is to get to Mars. No, I'm just teasing. The long-term goal,
Is to
that's
make
a
it
different company.
injectable.
Different company. The medium-term goal is to get an injectable that does it. Of course, that's going to require some FDA wrangling. But in a future tense, what we hope to have is hair follicle cloning, and that would mean hair follicle multiplication. So the scientific term, hair follicle neogenesis, would be the creation of new, viable, living and growing hair follicles in a laboratory ready for implantation. And so I'm hoping to have that for myself in the future, and that's why I banked my stem cells back in 2023.
Same.
So
I did mine too. We should have done
yeah, I'm
it
super.
when we were 20. If you're 20 and you're listening, bank your hair follicle stem cells.
Yeah, that's when they're the strongest, you know? I mean, I don't know if the ones that I banked are gray or not, but I'm hoping that they weren't.
Are there some therapies for gray hairs right now? Like, are your
Oh my
exosomes
gosh.
turning dark gray hair white, pigmented again?
Well, I'll have to tell you that, there have been several patients all within the past year who have been treated with Juvexo-H that have all remarked that their hair color has improved dramatically and is dramatically rejuvenated. And so I can't say I have a really strong clinical trial there. I'm just seeing some of the visual evidence. I've got some amazing photography that we have showing this improvement, and I can't explain it. Is there some rejuvenation of the hair follicle melanocyte population? Maybe hairs that were not totally gray or burned out in terms of pigment that are now rejuvenated. I think that, if you look at some of the bench work that's being done at the University of Miami with Dr. Ralph Paus and his work with rapamycin and hair follicles, you'll see that the hair follicles are, if they're not totally depigmented, that they have a chance to not only turn on and grow from some of these anti-aging compounds, but actually repigment. So there, I have some high hopes, but I don't have any, good science yet. We're working on it. So stay tuned.
I can't wait. I think that needs to happen in our lifetimes too, like the solution for gray hair.
Yeah, tell me about it. See all this gray right
It's
here? Come on.
such a lot of upkeep, my God.
Oh, if you choose that route, yeah.
I'm so excited about what you're doing with follicles. You mentioned a little bit about scaffolding, building a scaffold while doing these treatments with growth factors and PRP. Talk a little bit about that.
So the trifecta or troika, if you will, the most important three things that you need to know about regenerative medicine, and this is the first page in any regenerative medicine textbook: cells, signals, and scaffold. If you don't have those three things, you really can't do regenerative medicine. And so what do we mean by that? Obviously, stem cell therapy oftentimes is done with the cells, and the signals are those growth factors or exosomes that are being sent out. The scaffold is some kind of, whether it be a biologic material that could be implanted, for example, or a synthetic material for it to work on. If you're trying to repair skin, for example, for many, many years, like if you cut your finger, let's say we saw these things on YouTube, years ago, a hobbyist who was an airplane, a model airplane enthusiast, cut the tip of his finger, and he used pork bladder matrix, which was powder, on the tip of his finger, and it regrew the tip. Why did that work? Well, that was a scaffold, a biologic scaffold that the body saw and used as a rebuilding format, almost like the iron, if you will, inside of a bridge before you pour the concrete. The body sees that scaffold and eventually removes it, but it used it as a base to grow, regrow the finger. And so we've been using treatments like that, pork bladder, years and years ago, called ACell. Back in 2011, I was the first to present the use of ACell and PRP in conjunction for hair regrowth at the ISHRS conference in the Bahamas. And what I was able to determine through my small pilot study was that I was able to prolong the effect of PRP if we did it in conjunction with this biological scaffold. Now, at the time, pork bladder was a xenograft, right? It's not, wasn't very favorable. There was a lot of people that didn't want to get injected by a pork bladder or with pork bladder, and I can understand that. So the more, let's say, acceptable and more advanced biologics came next, and those are the placental tissue, umbilical cord tissues, and things like that. That was really the biological scaffold. So morselized placental tissue was very, very popular and still is as a biological scaffold or extracellular matrix, ECM, as it's called. And that can be used in conjunction with the PRP if patients choose. And we've had a lot of great success with that. The other thing is that we also now use synthetic. So many people are concerned, I don't want an allograft injected, meaning I don't want somebody else's placental tissue injected in me, even though there have been millions of tries and it's never been a problem or a reaction. I just don't want that allographic material. I want something that's my own or something that's clean and synthetic. And so synthetic material like polydioxinone has also been used. And I presented the first paper on PDO, polydioxinone threads for hair regrowth at the Live Derm conference here in Miami. We did it in conjunction with PRP at that time, but I had originally done the pilot study of about 10 patients, all of which had an amazing improvement in hair regrowth, not from dead follicles to new, but from weaker hairs to growing thicker, better, stronger. And the use of PDO threads is something I've been doing in my practice for, many years, thousands of patients, and we've had great success with that in conjunction with PRP.
How many threads are you placing, and how thick or long are they?
So
Caliber?
they're 29 gauge threads, and you can, pull up my presentations to see there's different sizes, different lengths. So, 20 to 30 centimeters, sometimes 40 centimeters long, just depending on the thickness and the toughness of the skin. If the patient has had previous hair transplants or has had microneedling or something, you may need to use shorter threads because they're just tougher to place with the needles. But this is done under painless local anesthetic, so the patient doesn't feel it. The threads are unseen, they're under the skin. We can deploy hundreds of threads in a single procedure if we need to, depending on the size and the shape of the area of concern. We can do it in conjunction with a transplant while your scalp is numb or as a standalone treatment with PRP. And within about 3 to 6 months, you're going to start to see dramatic hair regrowth. And the results last about 12 to 14 months. So you will need to repeat it as the polydioxinone dissolves and is taken away by the body. Tissue reaction is virtually unheard of. PDO has been used in the body in millions and millions of man years, millions of treatments, I should say, over many, many years, decades actually, as a slow absorbing suture material. That's basically what PDO is. And these small threads can work very, very well. But you have to put them in the right area. And that's one of the reasons we teach that at the Hair Coach program. So practitioners will want to learn how to use PRP correctly, measure the hair correctly, deploy exosomes correctly, deploy PDO correctly. Those are the folks that should be looking for the Bauman Certified Hair Coach program.
Very nice. And then what depth are you at placing that at? Is that at the follicular depth below that? Is
Just
getting
under the
more
follicle. So, when I
under?
presented the material at MCAS, you could see MCAS is the very 15,000 physicians that attend in Paris every winter. You can see that we place those threads underneath the layer of the follicles. So we don't want to be transecting any follicles with the deployment. We want to get in underneath. So a little bit deeper than where you would put the PRP.
Are you checking that on ultrasound, or is it just by tactile feel over the years you've developed the right plane?
Well, we do have ultrasound guidance for that if you're concerned about your placement. But once you get the feel of it, it's pretty simple and easy to stay out of the way of the follicle.
And then do you think that that's boosting angiogenesis in the area, or is that more like the scaffolding concept that you're giving the place for fibroblasts to anchor?
Well, that's a great question. The research is a little unclear on that. So there are some published clinical trials on polydioxinone threads in rats compared to minoxidil and placebo and such. And what it shows is that there's upregulation of specific pathways like FGF5 and downregulation of FGF7. And so when those things happen, five or seven, one goes up, one goes down when there's hair regrowth. And what you see is that gene expression really changes when you put the PDO in that area. So exactly why hair growth is occurring. I think we're still missing some pieces of the puzzle on that, but I would imagine that what the body is doing is slowly and gently reabsorbing that material without a specific harsh tissue reaction. It's just kind of, dissolving it enzymatically over time and taking it away. That activity releases the growth factors in the area that can simulate wound healing, collagen production, and activate hair follicle stem cells.
Amazing. And then let's talk a little bit. So we talked about exosomes. You mentioned red light. That's very trending right now. Consumers have no idea what red lights to buy. They're buying them on Amazon, Costco. What is your favorite, and how do you know what's going to give you quality and results?
Yeah, I've had this discussion with consumer, advocates, people that, are in the media, mass media, and also I've had this discussion with influencers who have been paid by some of these companies. But here's the thing: red light therapy does work as a health benefit. For hair regrowth, you need something stronger than an LED, in my opinion. Right at this moment, we don't have a super strong LED deployment method. So you get what you pay for in lasers. If you are on the low end of laser light therapy, you are in the like HD category of TV sets. Okay, that was great back in the 1990s, but that's not 4K, 8K today. So the cost of the laser is directly related to the power, the strength, and the quality of the lasers and the technology embedded. So it is so true, more in this world of electronic devices, that you get what you pay for in laser therapy. So, clinical grade lasers are typically only available from physicians. And what you're going to get on Amazon and from a TV commercial and late night infomercials is a watered down version. And so you don't want to be disappointed. You don't want to spend good money, on a treatment that's a placebo or something that's just so weak or a big clunky unit you can't travel with. What you need is a turbo laser cap, and that's why I work with the inventor of the original laser cap, Dr. Michael Rabin, to develop this. This is the Bauman Turbo Laser Cap. You can see it right here, Bauman Turbo Laser.
Wow.
The inside of the device has hundreds and hundreds of diodes, so well over 300 diodes for sure. You can see that it treats all the way back to the nape of the neck. That's what this panel is for. You can also see if I push on it, it's flexible. And what does that mean? That means that it's easy to travel with. So when you take it apart, it looks like this. Travels completely
Ah,
flat.
that's nice.
And then when you put it together, you fold it and snap it, and you get this device, bada bing. This is your super powerful 5-minute device for laser hair growth that has more coverage, 25% more coverage than any other device on the market, and a lot more power than your devices that you're going to get on Amazon. So Turbo Laser Cap is available from Baumann Medical. You can get it on the eStore. We do recommend a consultation and evaluation and measurements before you start any hair growth treatment.
Is there a wavelength of light that you think is important for people to keep in their heads, as well as a laser light frequency, or I don't know,
The
the
most important thing,
amplitude?
yeah, the most important thing to know about which wavelength has been proven over and over and over again to activate at the level of the mitochondria, the absorption spectrum of the mitochondria is that 650 nanometer wavelength. That's visible red. So we're not talking infrared. We're not talking heat, although heat can help with absorption of topicals. We're talking about red light, and it needs to have enough photons. It needs to have enough power to generate enough energy so that the hair follicles can rejuvenate. If they're weak, remember, hair follicles are some of the most highly metabolic cell populations on the planet in your body. And so you need a very, very powerful laser to do that. That's what the Turbo Laser Cap does just within 5 minutes.
That's impressive. And I think
5 minutes a night.
if people are not using red light, like that's such an easy thing that you can try at home. The other
Oh, absolutely. But don't waste your money on a crappy device. I mean, if you're looking at a big old bike helmet. Oh, and the other thing I just told, another consumer advocate just about an hour ago. A lot of these lasers that you see on Instagram that are super cheap coming out of China, they don't even have laser diodes in them. They're LEDs. They're literally like Christmas lights inside. You know,
It's
I mean,
sad, and
that's.
people are buying it. And it even says LED in the description, but they just don't know what to look for.
Yeah. Look for laser light therapy. You need to have a laser. And some of them say laser, but then you get the device and it's not a laser. And we've done many reports on that as well. There are a few ways to tell whether your device is actually a laser or not. The quickest way, to be honest, is to put a piece of paper over the light. If it looks like a soft light, it's not a laser. If it speckles and sparkles, then it's a laser.
Okay, that's a great tip. How about supplements? It's a quick, easy thing people can do at home, and they're buying all kinds of hair supplement crap over the counter and at the vitamin store. Are there some tried and true milligrams and dosages of products that you think everyone should be on?
Well, I mean, again, it's going to be tailored to what the patient really needs. You know, we don't just throw, blindly a multivitamin. A lot of our younger patients, young men and young women aren't on a multivitamin, and we may start them off with something basic like a multi that has B complex in it. Extra biotin, for example, is a great way to start. But some of our patients are super stressed out. They're still dealing with issues from the pandemic, maybe. They might need ashwagandha to lower those cortisol levels down. And so that might be a nice herbal supplement. But I'm a big fan of B complex. If you're deficient in protein, if you're a vegan or vegetarian, that's all great and good, all power to you, but you need to make sure your protein intake is on point. Those follicles are requiring an enormous amount of energy and building blocks, nutrients and fuel to make a hair fiber correctly and aesthetically pleasing one. So, if you're protein deficient, you're not going to grow hair. Forget about it.
So important. And then, are there new cutting edge things that are coming for you this year, or any meetings that you're going to you want to talk about? I would love for people to reach out and find you on your social handles and your future upcoming meetings and launches.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, we just got back from the American Academy of Anti-Aging. It was a rager this year. And what I mean by that is that there were 7,000 physicians there and over 500 expo vendors. It was a 40% increase over last year. And the energy and excitement in the world of Make America Healthy Again is certainly catching on to all aspects of this country. And it's certainly an exciting place to be. So A4M was great. We are huge fans of Dave Asprey. He is a very public patient of ours, and he loves the Turbo Laser Cap. He loves the Baumann line of supplements that we have, the nutritional supplements specifically for hair, same ones you get on the eStore. He got along with his hair transplant. So we'll be in Austin, Texas, coming this spring at the Biohacking Conference. That's the Biohacking Conference. That's the one. That's the main one. this year. We'll also be at several other smaller biohacking conferences here and there. Don't Die, which is great with Brian Johnson and some others, Biohacker Expo and so forth. But what I want to tell folks is that they can, if they're concerned about hair, and maybe they've started treatments or tried something either with an online pharmacy or they went to their local dermatologist or Medi Spa and got some vitamin or supplement. Oh, the other supplement I want to mention, the latest and greatest, is going to be Xtress. Xtresse. That's going to be the next Nutrafol. I'm telling you, this is the latest and greatest. We've just started to use it in the practice, and we'll have some clinical data coming soon. But that's my prediction is that's going to be a big hit.
Interesting.
Those
Nutrafol
are.
had some bad press recently too. I wonder if they're going to survive that, hopefully.
Well, I don't. I think in my practice, we haven't had any issues at all with Nutrafol. I've been a big proponent of that since 2016. Since the launch with the physicians and their clinical data. So we'll see what happens. Look, once any company reaches a certain level of success, you're always going to have people that are going to try to take them down, and try to unfortunately do bad stuff. So I think for the vast majority of folks, if you're checking your blood levels, liver enzymes, things like that, your regular nutritionals should be totally fine and good.
I would
But
agree.
my point is that if you're out there and you've tried something for hair loss and you don't think it's really doing the job, maybe you bought one of those Amazon laser caps that you heard about on a late night infomercial, it's okay. Let's just add another modality to your regimen. Let's just level up, as you say. Put something else into the regimen. Maybe it's a prescription product, but maybe not. Maybe it's just something good on the nutraceutical side. Maybe it's something non-chemical like a PRP treatment or an exosome therapy treatment, something like that, or a TED treatment in the office. Because if you don't address the hair loss process with either aggressive intervention, what's going to happen is we say time equals follicles. And so that means that over time, you're going to lose more hair if it's not appropriately treated. It doesn't just stop when you reach a certain age. It just always continues to get worse. And it's harder and harder to fight as you get older. Just like our muscle mass and our brain function and our skin, you've got to take action as early as possible if you want to maintain its good function. Hair and follicles are the same. So reach out to me at baumanmedical.com. That's a website of mine that has over 20,000 pages of information. Obviously, you can find me on all the social media channels at Dr. Alan Bauman. But Bauman medical.com. / ask if you want to just ask a question. You can ask a question at any time, 24/7, and my team and I will get right back to you with an answer. If we don't know the answer, we'll get back to you that we don't know the answer and that we're going to research it for you. But I'm happy to help patients and clients and folks from all over the globe as we have for over 27 years.
Amazing. He is truly amazing. You're my hair go-to expert. So I really trust your knowledge base. And just having been in the industry so long, I think you are very scientific with what you're doing. So I'd love to invite you to come lecture at some meetings with us on the aesthetic side this year. I know you have a busy schedule, but I'm going to reach out.
That would be great.
Yeah, you guys can definitely trust the information that you're hearing from Dr. Bauman. Thank you for coming on the podcast. And don't forget, guys, reach out and find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, doing amazing things with people's faces. More and more cellular medicine. We're doing things at the level of changing the way that healing occurs, the regenerative aesthetics, polynucleotides, peptides, all the things that Alan's talking about with exosomes. It's really exciting times for us in this field. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.